It's 10 after 11 o'clock. Welcome to the third and final hour of the show. This morning, we're going to be looking at the intersection of politics and religion. It is Easter weekend, and we know often what happens on Easter weekend. We will see lots of different religious gatherings across the country, and undoubtedly present at these gatherings will be different leaders of political organizations. I think especially so in an election year and in the middle of campaigning, more and more of these leaders are finding themselves in the corridors of churches and the corridors of all sorts of other religious institutions. So what is this intersection, and do we find that religious leaders also open themselves up to the interests of political parties? I wonder what congregants make of what happens sometimes where political party leaders will be given platforms in their churches. Let me invite onto the show Reverend Mpho Molebatsi, who is a pastor at Global Theological Mission, formerly All Nations Evangelical Missions of South Africa. Reverend Molebatsi, good morning.
Good morning to you, ma'am, and good morning to your listeners.
Reverend Thembelani Jantile is a senior pastor at Mamelodi Baptist Church. Reverend Jantile, good morning to you.
Good morning, Kathy, and good morning to your listeners.
So,
good morning to Moruti Mulibas.
In a country like South Africa, where when asked, over 70% of respondents say that they are Christian and believe and act out according to a Christian faith, the question of religion and politics, I think, becomes even more important, especially the intersection of it, because we often see the extent to which political party leaders become also very intentional about associating themselves with religious leaders. Reverend Molebatsi, let's speak a little bit about that history in our country.
Yes, ma'am. We have a very difficult history ourselves in this country because religion and politics have always been a syncretism, meaning a unification. And it has achieved a lot. I mean, if you look at how the apartheid system established itself based on religion, claiming to be the nation of God, and that they have their identities intertwined with the divine nature of God, and they came up with legislations that totally oppressed and suppressed and discriminated against non-Afrikaners or non-whites in those days. And today we see that religion also, before I say today, we remember how the struggle of the church against apartheid. The Archbishop Desmond Tutu, Dr. Ombes Nodeh stood up, and Dr. Allan Pusak and other religious leaders opposing apartheid. And today they are not here. We don't have any voice that points out to this government for 30 years democracy and say to this government, you continue to fail our people. You continue to leave our people behind. You own this country. You own the wealth of this country at the expense of the people you're supposed to lead and serve. So it's a very difficult thing. On the other part is that there's this notion that says that religion belongs to the domain of spiritual activities, and politics are relegated to earthly and material existence, and therefore religion is used as an instrument by politicians in order to gather their political power and to be in control. And it's happened even now before Easter tomorrow. They have to be going to the churches, not that they want to be prayed for, not because they want to have a critique and evaluate themselves as politicians in terms of how they have run this country. Are there ways in which the development of South Africa and South African citizens have been in the agenda? To what extent have they achieved? What are the challenges, and what are they willing to do with the help of the church or the religion that they would attend the service to tomorrow? So this are the issues. Yes, ma'am.
Reverend Jantile, I'll give you a chance to continue now, Reverend Mulebatsi. Reverend Jantile, your take on where we are today in South Africa when it comes again to this intersection of politics, religion, and how we see, I think, players on both end speak into what is happening in our country, and perhaps even maintain relationships, get into some of these relationships for their own interests.
Yeah, thank you, Kathy. Let me start first by, just mentioning these terms. And I'm glad that you are using religion and politics, actually, instead of church and state. And in most cases, when we argue, the intersection between faith and life in general, or faith and political action, we mostly think of the state, and the state and the church are two separate entities. One is divine instituted, another one is a human creation. But once you go to politics generally and religion, you can't separate the two. People are found in this tension between exercising their faith even in a political arena. So political involvement is also an expression of Christianity, and most of the politicians are Christians, or some of the politicians are Christians, and this tension we need to get to it deeply, because faith at some point serves as a foundation stone for political engagement for many people. And that is why you will see people coming to church to be prayed for, or to attend these church services. In any case, the relationship between the church and politics in South Africa is a very deep one, as Ndati Mulebatsi has said. Some of these political parties were started by church people. And at some point after 1960, when the political leaders went into exile, it was the church that opened its doors. Political rallies were held in churches. And it's unfortunate that right now we see people who have betrayed the values that we believed in. And then when we see them in churches, we get angry. But we forget that the church was really at the forefront when there was a vacuum of political leadership, and the church churches were open for people to bury their loved ones, to have political meetings, and some ran to churches to escape the wrath of that apartheid government. So you cannot take away the church, or rather religion, from the politics of South Africa. And at the same time, you cannot take away politics from the religion or religions in South Africa. So just because we have people who have betrayed our values and we have betrayed people, that does not mean we shouldn't associate or invite them even to account to a church space, to speak of what they've done in this community. And I, for one, I really advocate that the church should be part and parcel of the community. And being part and parcel of the community is being deeply involved in politics.
All right. We're going to continue the conversation in a moment. And just on this issue of accountability, you know, Reverend Jandile, I wonder to what extent the platforms that are created actually provide a true opportunity to hold political leaders accountable. Because often it seems that what it is a platform for them to be able just to get their messaging across. It becomes a one-way conversation rather than also getting that feedback from whatever constituencies that they might be speaking to. But we'll continue the conversation in a moment, and I want us to pick up just on that point when we continue.
The Talking Point with Cathy Motlhatlana, weekdays 9 a.m. till midday.
We continue the conversation on The Talking Point. We're looking at the intersection of religion and politics. What does it all mean, especially for South Africa today? Of course, it's on the eve of Easter weekend. Joining us for this conversation, Reverend Mpho Molebadzi, who's pastor at Global Theological Mission, formerly All Nations, and also Reverend Thembelani Jandile, who's a senior pastor at Mamelodi Baptist Church. So, Reverend Molebadzi, just on this issue of accountability, both of you have expressed the sentiment that there's been great disappointment from the church in terms of the leaders that we have, what was promised versus what has been delivered. So there is that acknowledgement of the fact that things have not gone as what they should or what was anticipated. And yet we continue to see religious leaders give platforms to political leaders within their structures, within their organizations. Is there accountability in the true sense, or do we, you know, is it convenient to say we're disappointed, you know, leaders have not delivered what they need to, but where it seems that the interests of the church can also be served, does it become convenient then to open the doors to these political leaders?
Well, that's a very good statement, ma'am. The most important part of this is that the church is not, or let me say, religions are not given any platform where they could be able to be prophetic to the state to ensure that the state delivers justice. And in South Africa in particular, the social and economic justice is long overdue. And the various churches, as it were, as tools and instruments of colonialism and apartheid and even the current ANC cabinet, finds itself in a difficult position to be able to say anything. If you still remember the last word, I warned you, because the government and the president of the time did not listen to this of a religious leader in South Africa who fought against apartheid. So accountability also is seen when it comes to politics in the
wild. Apologies, Reverend Molebadzi. Yeah. I'm going to ask that we call you back. The connection to you is not great. We're losing you somewhat on the line there. We'll bring you back in a moment. While we do that, Reverend Jandile, can you come in and answer then on this issue of accountability and the extent to which the church is in earnest holding political leaders accountable?
Yeah, actually, Kathy, you're making me to think and ask, when we say church, whom are we referring to? And let me just generalize also then in trying to answer that question. One, the church, what we have picked up, and I'll say in a broader ecumenical movement, The South African Council of Churches, the TSRs, many different organizations that we have. What one picks up is that most ministers do not know how to engage the state. And hence other people will say, no, but we want platforms. But platforms are created in certain places. People will be told, come and engage on this particular law that we want to be, you know, to be passed and all that. I mean, it's rare where you'll find a church leaders in such conversations. You'll always find political parties. But secondly, you cannot engage the state when you are fragmented. I'm not sure if I'm using this a correct term. And you can't at the same time engage the state and hold the state accountable when you come as an individual, without coming as one body speaking with one voice. But also it speaks of the training that ministers are receiving currently. The current, you know, we need to look at the colleges that we have all around us. What is it that they are teaching pastors? Are they teaching pastors who will, promote human welfare and justice, or criticize the state when it departs from the standard of justice? So those are the challenges that I personally think, as the church, we need to look into, seriously. Because I think the problem is we struggle to engage with the state. But also, it's true, as Muruti is saying, the focus of mainstream media is not on ecumenical movements. It's only now during the COVID and during the Zuma era, where you saw that, okay, the mainstream media is now giving ecumenical movement some attention. But the mainstream media will always focus on Christian fundamentals and people who really are not engaging the issues as much as they are engaging the scriptures.
All right. We're going to continue the conversation in a moment. It's 11:30, time for the latest news headlines.
#SFM Talking Point.
All right, we continue the conversation on the talking point. Reverend Mpho Molebatsi and Reverend Thembelani Jantile are our guests. Reverend Molebatsi, just making sure that I have you back on the line. Good morning.
Great to be back.
Yes, yes, you are back. So one of the issues that we had touched on before we lost you was just the question of accountability and the role of accountability between these two spheres, the religious sphere and the political sphere, and
yeah,
how and why we're seeing what really seems to be a regression from religious leaders in holding political leaders accountable.
Yes. The point I was also making is that, first of all, the church, it has been captured over many centuries. And that as a result, the church or religions were weakened to only advocate the aims and objectives of the status quo of the state or of the government or of the political order. And this has been so clear, not even from our times, but even from ancient times, even in biblical terms. The Pharisees, the Sadducees, the scribes, they were the religious military prefects of the Roman Empire, to ensure that there shall be no insurrection or any revolutionary means by any religious leader. And Jesus was even arrested by the very people who supposed to have been in his camp, establishing the kingdom of God in the Roman Empire without destroying that government, but transforming it. So we've inherited this, as Muruti mentioned, the theological institutions and the education that we're receiving, they're all outside of the secular history. They're out of the religious, the political, the socioeconomic issues that horribly affect our nation or our mission in the world. Let me put it that way. So the theological mission of the church, which is to establish the kingdom of God, not futuristically, but right now. That means in their now time, through the redemptive activity of the gospel of Jesus, it is not happening. And you interview Christians, they still run around with that Plato's and Socrates' polarization of religion and politics. Reverend Mulibati,
the connection to you is still not great. I'm so sorry about that. I'm struggling to make out part of what you're saying on air because of the quality of that line. We'll see if the team is able to fix it in what remains of this conversation. Let me go to Mbombela Mdluli. Good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Kete.
Yes.
Yes. No, thank you for the discussion. The problem here is that the church has a particular understanding on how to lead people. The politicians, they have other set of rules, so that makes them not to work together. And when you look what is happening now, you can see that, I mean, there is no direction. And according to the scriptures, reading Proverbs 29, verse 2, the Bible says, when the godly are in authority, the people rejoice. But when the wicked are in power, they groan. That's what we see now.
All right, it looks like we've lost Mdluli there. I'm not sure what's going on with our phone lines. The quality of connection on the phone lines is not great. I do apologize for that. Thabo, you're in Kroonstad. Hopefully, it will be better with you. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Chessie.
Mm.
Yeah, Chessie, I think maybe the way you coined the topic for today is actually narrowing. The topic is about the interaction between religion and the politics, and now we're digressing to the church and the politics. I think that's where the problem is, because all the questions and the input seems to be about the interaction between the church and the politics. So we must not make a mistake also of dissociating the political beings from members of the church, because the same politicians and the same pastors, some or many of them are actually politicians. We've got churches in this country which has got political parties. A classical example would be your ATN. In reality, ATN is part of the 12 apostolic church. You've got a Reverend Moshe, who's a politician, has got a church, and in the main, when you see the political party, can't dissociate itself from the church, or the church cannot dissociate itself from the political party of Kenneth Moshe. So I thought the pastor there would be able to respond as to how should the church, or how should the religion interact with politics. I think that's where the mayor gap is. But the reality of the matter is that you cannot dissociate the church from the politics, and the politics cannot be dissociated from the church and religion, because the same people who are in the church are the same people who become political animals outside. So it's very much good for the churches to give platform for politicians to interact with members of the church. But it must not only happen during the electionary process. Even in between the elections, the church must be able to invite the politicians, the members of parliament, to come and interact with its members. on a particular matter, even if there's a bill that is under discussion, there's nothing that prohibits the church from inviting politicians or parliament to come and address its members about a particular matter that the church might have an issue with. I think the church is the one that is actually inactive in that particular regard. You must not wait, because the nature of our government is that you should not wait for government to come to you. You also have equal rights to go and approach government to say, we have got a view on this particular matter, including even the public hearings and when the laws are made.
Mm.
Invitations are issued out publicly for any member of the society to come and participate. So the church leaders must not wait to get special invitations to the church. They must also approach the same way that the politicians will come to the church during this particular time. Which, for me, there's nothing wrong with that. If I go to church and I want to be a member of parliament, then I approach the church to say, can you pray for me, or I want to be visible, because the church and members of the church are voters, and the politicians must also be visible in churches, Kathy.
You know, Thabo, I think that what you're saying, I don't think that our guests fundamentally disagree with what you're saying. Of course, the question for me, as we've broadened it, is also about accountability, right? That when you have a church that is representing what is supposed to be the most poor in society, the most vulnerable, the most marginalized, then to what extent does that find expression when you have political party leaders coming in churches, being aware some of them are accused of all sorts of things? And one would think that the church then also becomes a voice over some of these issues to say, but, you know, these are the conditions of people that we work with on a day-to-day basis, and you are the one that is either in a position of power or in a position of influence. You have the opportunity to change that. So where does that accountability then come in, rather than it sort of by and large just being seen as an opportunity to come, yes, speak to the congregation, but it's serving what might be a very narrow interest on the part of the politicians and probably on the part of the church too?
For electioneering processes. In between, when the church is concerned, the members of the church are facing the same challenges that members of the society are facing.
Mm.
So there's nothing that prohibits the church from inviting a particular a politician to come and account on a particular matter, and have a meeting kind of environment, engage that politicians to say, you are failing in this particular regard. So that tomorrow when the church confronts these people, hold these people accountable,
mm.
the church would have said, we have invited you, you have made this particular commitment, but you delivered none of them. So the church must not only wait during the election times and then accuse the politicians that you only come during the electioneering process.
All right.
The church must equally has got the responsibility to invite them to come, engage members of the church. Thank you, Kathy.
All right, Thabo. Thanks for that contribution. Thabo is out in Kroonstad. Reverend Molebatsi, do you want to respond to that?
Yes, ma'am. The point I was making is that there's a serious polarization between the church and the state, which must be addressed urgently. It worked for the apartheid government to integrate the religion and politics to achieve their goals. They have succeeded. But when it comes to us theologically, the church is still captured. I heard what Muruti said. But the issue is, the church cannot redress the state in South Africa and hold it accountable for service delivery. We have it for 30 years, democracy in this country. It's been a big struggle. All the sonas the state has made have never achieved anything at all but to re-entrench the apartheid system back on track. Right now, look at the labor relations in this country. 26 rand to 67 cents minimum wage per hour today. Who has structured that abject poverty, stricken, driven lives for our people and our nation? So the church understands politics in the narrow sense, like I do, in terms of government, but also in the wider sense. So the politics in the wider sense says that the nation and the church within that nation should be able to see change and be involved in bringing transformation. Can the church say something to the labor relations and the economic issues of this country? No. Why? Because that polarization still exists, that the church must only preach heaven to the people and the state will preach politics and economic development or make laws on earth.
What do you believe is behind the polarization?
The fact that the church, when I'm saying the politicians, if you look at history, let me mention one person. Alexander the Great Hellenized the church. He, by Hellenizing the nation of Israel. And they've changed the Bible to suit them. The Romans have changed the Bible in terms of its hermeneutical, exegetical, and systematic theology to meet its own needs. There's a text in the Bible, Romans 13, obey the government because they're ordained of God. This is a serious misconception and heresy and fallacy that is proclaimed by the state to the nation and to the church and to religions. There are religions that are discriminated against in this country. And to use the majority religion, which is so-called Christian, which is 85.7% majority, it is to use it as a feeder area for the politicians to can be able to rally more political power in competition with other political or politicians. So this is the issue that must be addressed. I mean, why don't we have a simple challenge in terms of labor? Why do laborers don't own the means of production? Why is it that only those who have companies in this country and owned private owned land have that power that the workers don't have? If a company has its capital as its strong point, as a means of production, then laborers' hands, toils should become theirs too.
All right.
We need to bring this, that Easter has come to bring this kind of equality. God says we are all the same. We have shared humanity. We have the same shared, even spiritual formation at the core foundation of our character and personalities. We are in the image of God, equally made. So we should be all of us compete with each other in a positive, just sense,
all right,
of allowing everyone to make the most of their lives in this world, whether you are a company owner, whether you are a laborer or a worker.
All right.
The president has
Reverend
made it difficult for us as well.
Yeah,
he structured this kind of labor relations that brings about inequality in our country. The president.
Reverend Mulebati, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there for today. We're completely out of time for this conversation. In fact, that's where I'm going to leave it for today. Apologies, Reverend Jantile. I won't give you, you won't have another opportunity just to put in your final thought there. Up next is the book reading, followed by the update at noon. I'll be back with you again on Tuesday morning. Have a lovely Easter week.